soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 as we continue on tonight, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Hey, quick moment here, LamontBrands.com. Why do you go to LamontBrands.com? Because you can buy the Soccer Matters t-shirts there and hats. All the proceeds go to the 501c charity Snowdrop Foundation for pediatric cancer. So Jerry and Mel Lamont doing it well. LamontBrands.com. Great opportunity here to catch up with Apple commentator. You probably know him, long time in Major League Soccer. He's a former national team goalkeeper for Canada. I believe 53 caps. He is Paul Dolan. He joins us tonight from Canada. Paul, how are you?
I'm great, Glenn. It's very nice to be speaking with you again. It's been too long.
Yeah, always a pleasure to have you on. I've always appreciated your great commentary over all the years. So let's get into Vancouver as we've got them here tomorrow night, and we're really looking forward to this one. 6-1-3 in the last 10. Are they one of the most dangerous teams to be playing in Major League Soccer right now?
I think so, and nobody knows about it. And nobody knows about Ryan Gold. Probably Houston Dynamo fans feel the same way about how well their team is playing, and maybe not as many people are paying attention to their story as well. But the Whitecaps, you mentioned the run they're on in the last 10. I think maybe more impressive is that they're midway through a 7-game trip away from home. 7 games. I mean, you've never heard of it before. One of the games was forced in because of a postponement at the Colorado Rapids. But in the first 4 games, having not won an away game for the entire year, but one at LAFC, they're undefeated in those 4 games, and they've won 3 of them. It's an incredible stat. They're coming good at the right time. They've picked up a couple of good players, Canadian national team players. But I think the key reason is that Ryan Gold, again, somebody that nobody's talking about as an MVP candidate, has absolutely lit it up. His partnership with Brian White is maybe second to none in the entire league in terms of the goal contributions between a duo. And they just know each other's moves. The chemistry is incredible. And you've got a player like Ryan Gold that right now, Vanni Sartini loves to call him the working man's DP, is the best two-way player in the league without question. The goal contributions, everything else, those are the stats you see. But what you don't see is how hard he works off the ball, winning the ball back, working for his team, pressing from the front, and really inspiring the rest of the 11. So it's been a good run for the Whitecaps. I think Houston catches them at not the best time because despite the fact that, as I say, they're in the midst of this incredibly long road trip, they're flying high right now.
You know, that was interesting because I'm looking at my notes here and I wrote down next to Ryan Gold, you know, a little note about the amount of times he helped win the ball back or force the ball into an area that where their team won the ball back near an opponent's goal. And I like that the working man's DP. Has that relationship, I know it's been a good relationship between him and White, but has that blossomed a little bit now with a little bit of the system change and the bringing in of Richie Larea?
Well, you know, what's funny, Glenn, is that when Ryan Gold first joined the Whitecaps 2 years ago, midway through the season, he came in as a designated player from Portugal, second division in Portugal. Not a lot was known about him. There's a tag, the Scottish Messi, but you get that with every nationality, don't you? And, you know, he's not the tallest player and he's got a pretty effective dribble, but he's not really like a Messi in any way, I don't think, considering the fact that Messi never defends for one. But the partnership struck up right away, funny enough, between Brian White and Ryan Gold, so much so that Ryan Gold was the one on the end of a few plays where he was heading goals in something he'd never done before. It kind of tailed off a little bit last year. And I have to say, at the start of this year, that relationship, despite the fact that they were creating chances, Brian White led the league in chances missed, expected goals, I should say, And a lot of those chances were set up by Ryan Gauld. The chemistry was just off that little bit. There was something missing. And then all of a sudden, as of May 31st, where Ryan Gauld hadn't scored until that game against the Houston Dynamo when they broke out for six against the Dynamo in Vancouver, that was his first goal on that day. And he's got 10 goals and 9 assists since that point. So it's really been something that all of a sudden the chemistry's clicked. Richie Larea coming in can only add to that. But really, it was something that kind of started in the last game against the Dynamo.
Paul Dolan joining us, former Canadian national team goalkeeper, color commentator on Apple. You've seen him throughout the years on TSN as well. Paul, who identified Ryan Gauld? Because that person deserves a raise.
You know what? It's funny. I don't know whether it's Axel Schuster or whether it was the scouting department that now no longer exists. Nico Overhaul was actually, if not let go, moved on his own accord. I don't know the entire story behind why he left the Whitecaps, but it's those types of players that I think Axel Schuster and the Whitecaps have been looking to try to pick up. Good value designated players, good value players like him. You know, I'll give Axel Schuster some credit. In the offseason, he had three targets. He wanted to upgrade in goal, and I think he's done that with Yohei Takaoka. Although there have been times where I think there's more to see from Takaoka, I think he can adapt to the league a little bit better. He's excellent with his feet, and there are areas sometimes where he's not as good coming for crosses or commanding the penalty area, but I think that's an area that he can improve once he gets more settled into the league.
By the way, Paul, just let me interrupt. I would not want to be a goalkeeper with you being the color analyst on a game.
I don't hammer him. I do like Yohei Takaoka. I like what he's done. And the same thing for you, Glenn. You'd know better than most. So he has been an upgrade, though, on Thomas Asahl, another young Canadian player who I really like. But it wasn't quite his time just yet. And now he's had a season-ending surgery. So Takaoka was an upgrade. The other area they wanted to upgrade is an additional center back in Matias Laborda. He's a Uruguayan player. I think the jury's still out on him. And then Sergio Cordova up front as well, the Venezuelan striker who came over from RSL and signed from Augsburg in Germany. He wasn't good. He went 17 games without scoring, and now he's been moved on in a good bit of business. They recouped the fee that they paid, $2.5 million. He's moved on to a team in Turkey, and that's freed up another spot. So getting back to Axel Schuster, I think that he's identified the needs of the team. If they haven't worked, he's been quick to move out from them and quickly move into Richie Larea and Sam Adekubi, Canadian internationals we picked up to strengthen the spot where they were weakest in the wingback positions. And then they just picked up Junior Hoylett as well. Kind of, if not a stopgap measure, with Sergio Cordova gone for the rest of the year, someone who can come off the bench, maybe even start a game here and there, another Canadian international with Premier League experience who can add to the Whitecaps attack, which has been really good this year.
Talking to Paul Dolan, you know, I look at the story with Ryan Gauld, and then I even look at Brian White, and I go, you know, how many people would have predicted they'd be where they are, you know, right now? I mean, that there's an innate ability there that somebody saw something in both these guys. And White's a great story, too, because, you know, he was a Red Bull product and, you know, really banged in goals at a bunch of different levels and really incrementally rise to the point where now is he's currently maybe the most dangerous striker in MLS.
Yeah, I was surprised that the Whitecaps were able to get Brian White when they did for Tim Parker and an exchange there. And you know, Tim Parker was an excellent defender for the Whitecaps at that time. He's proven to be a good MLS center back, I think. But Brian White, in his minutes with the Whitecaps to start, immediately showed that penchant for getting into those dangerous areas. And that's what he does. You'll never see him score a 25-yard cracker top corner. Everything is messy in front of the goal. I think there was one that Julian Gressel put off his nether regions against the Dynamo, if I'm not mistaken, as well, another game. There was six in that game. I can't remember them all, Glenn. But
that was a crazy, chaotic game. That was like a track meet.
Yeah, it was. And it was not a 6-2 game either. I mean, Houston was good in that game for large parts, especially in the first half. But Brian White himself has just understood what his role is. Vanni Sartini has said that he is the most selfless center forward. And you'll find that Vanni loves the hyperbole. He's the best in the world, or he's the most zonal coach in the world, he'll say, or Ryan Gold is the you know, most the best defensive player in the league or whatever. And he says of Brian White that he is the most selfless player in the league. He'll do that running. He'll take defenders away. He'll fight for balls inside the area. And he's come good. The Whitecaps gave him an extension, even though things weren't going all that well to start the year. I mentioned some of the missed chances that he had. But you stick with a player, you get that chemistry with a Ryan Gold and the rest of the team, and the goals start flying in for him.
It's Paul Dolan. He's on the Apple broadcast for Major League Soccer and, of course, knows Vancouver very well, former international goalkeeper for Canada. All right, Vanni Sartini, to me, is a great character in MLS, and I think you need these types of characters. And there is a level of entertainment with him. I have to really believe that. I want you to take me behind that curtain, though, and tell me what the strengths of the coach of Vancouver is, Vanni Sartini.
I love the guy. I really do. I think he is a breath of fresh air for the league. He was what the Whitecaps needed at the time after Mark Santos was let go. He energizes a team. You see the character that he is on the sideline, his interactions with the officials, with the opponents, with his team. But the guy is, I don't want to say a tactical mastermind, because, you know, is there one in the world? I guess you could say Pep Guardiola, or, you know, that there are at the very top level. And Vanni Sartini is just in his, second full year, if you want to call it that. But I think he helps the Whitecaps win games. And he does it, as you know, he was with the U.S. Federation. So he's got a very good tactical understanding of the game. He's very set in the way he likes to play. I mentioned that zonal thing where, you know, we talked to him early in his tenure, and he said, look, I am the most zonal coach in the world, but he sticks to it. And so his defensive shape on set plays, you'll see, is very deep, which is somewhat unusual, although I'm starting to see it more and more around the world. I'm not saying he's a trendsetter necessarily, but he believes in the systems that he has in place. He likes to get the ball in behind, you know, where it used to be something that was frowned upon to go direct. If you can get a player running in behind the defense, one-on-one in the goalkeeper, what better situation is that? What's the first principle of attacking play? It's penetration. If you can get in behind, why not? It doesn't always have to be beautiful football. But when goals are flying in, I think the critics of Vanni Sartini, who maybe thought he was all about the rah-rah, are starting to see that he's, given the good players that he has now, he's able to galvanize a group. And he always says this as well. The team is the leader. That is the single most important thing. And that's why when you get guys like Brian White and Ryan Gold and Andres Cubas all doing everything they can for the team rather than individual glory, it starts to come together. And that's why you're seeing success right now.
All right. So that's part one with Paul Dolan of Apple TV, former Canadian national team goalkeeper on Vancouver Whitecaps. Stick with us right here. We'll come back in a moment. All presented by DaspitLaw.com. And we'll get part two.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We remind you always to subscribe to the podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever you do. Also, you can come to ESPN975.com and get the podcast there as well. Make sure you hit me up at Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. Part two, Paul Dolan, Canadian national team goalkeeper, Apple TV, as we continue our discussion on the Vancouver Whitecaps. He's Paul Dolan, very, very informational about the Vancouver Whitecaps and Major League Soccer. Does that direct nature, obviously that direct nature sets up other aspects of your game so that you can play underneath and maybe it gets a back line dropping off against you so you get a little bit more space for the likes of Ryan Gold.
That's absolutely true. There always becomes options then if the threat of getting in behind is there. And some teams don't respect it. They'll play a high line, and that's fine too, to try to condense what's going on and then trust their center backs or the goalkeeper to come off the line or whatever the case may be. And like you said, it doesn't always work. But I think having that threat, Brian White isn't necessarily the quickest player in the league either, but he's got his number eights making those runs in behind, trying to drag space trying to open things up. He's also said, I hate wingers. Like I said, very extreme. But then you bring in Richie Larea and Sam Adekubi, who are fantastic wide players, but they're not wingers. You know, they're wing backs, if you will, that do the job defensively. And then when the space is there to occupy, you're able to get crosses in. It's the same thing he did with Julian Gressel earlier in the year. He took him from maybe the best wide player being able to service a ball from those distances out wide to bringing him into a narrow number eight. But then Gressel would always find himself getting a little wider into those situations when the game presented itself. And then you'd see that service that he could play in. So he's got a good mind for the game, Benny. He knows what he wants, and he's got the players to do it now as well.
Paul, I'm thinking of a matchup here, and it's maybe not one you'll think of, maybe you will, but I think it's one of the best stories in MLS right now as far as it's kind of a Gall, Brian White story with Griffin Dorsey of Houston. He started playing in the Leagues Cup. He won the right back position. He drives the team forward from the right side of the field, and all of a sudden he's got a polish to his game that has not been there in the prior years, even going back to when he was at TFC, right? He always had high energy. But he has become a problem for opposing teams here as of late, coming from the right back position, either by the volume of runs that he makes looking to receive the ball or simply by running it forward. The matchup on that side of the field is one I'm interested to see.
Yeah, I am as well. And I'm the same. I've always had a close eye on Toronto FC. I did the games for Sportsnet for them for many years. And so I saw the players coming up through the system. And I like what I've seen, the development of Griffin Dorsey. And I'm not sure who's going to be on the left side for the Whitecaps because Sam Adekubi was injured, didn't play in the last game against Toronto.
Is it Raposo the last game, Ryan Raposo?
Yeah, and he actually played quite well. In fact, Ryan Raposo is a player who I think with the threat of newcomers coming into the system and into the team would have been one that you probably saw on his way to the bench and spot time. But then knowing that Richie Larea and Sam Adekubi were coming in into the positions he's been playing the most this year, he had his best game of the year against Tigres. He was the man of the match. He was absolutely phenomenal. I thought he played well in Toronto as well. He hit the crossbar, had another shot that was really well saved by Romero. And so that matchup will be a good one. Now, whether Vanny allows Ryan Raposo to get forward as much or concerns himself with Dorsey, I think the Whitecaps will play the same way they do away from home as they like to do at home. And they don't sit deep, but they do look to counter if it's on. You know, they're smart about that. And so we'll see what that matchup is like. But I do like the progression from Griffin Dorsey. He's been an excellent player for the Dynamo this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's given them an entirely new dimension. And boy, I'll tell you, if you're not willing to run with him, number one, that's a precursor, I think. But he has been a fantastic story. I just want to get a quick note on Alessandro Schopf. Noticed him coming a little bit late to the edge of the penalty area. How about a little word on him, midfielder?
Yeah, that's another interesting one there, Glenn, because he's come over from the Bundesliga. Austrian player who has a good pedigree, obviously playing at one of the best leagues in the world. And he's come in with high expectations, not in terms of goal production necessarily or chance creation, but the goal production and chance creation has been practically nil. But he's a guy that never loses the ball. He's very good in possession. There were one or two times against Toronto. It actually stood out for me because he played a soft pass that got intercepted. But normally, he's excellent in tight spaces. He keeps the rhythm of the midfield going. And I think there's something to be said for players like that who might not necessarily show up on the score sheet and create all these chances. But I do know that Axel Schuster and Vanni Sartini, they want a little bit more offensive production from him. He scored one goal in San Jose earlier in the year, and he thought, okay, maybe he's going to come through here. But there have been occasions, too, where he has arrived late to the edge of the area, and you think there's a chance for a shot or a slip pass or something like that, just hasn't really materialized yet for him. So I don't know if he's still kind of finding his way, getting used to teammates or what it might take for him to break out. But he's a player that I think still has some upside, but hasn't quite shown it yet.
Canadian national team, former goalkeeper Paul Dolan on the call, Apple Major League Soccer. We got two quick ones for you, Paul, and then we got to run here to fit this in. All right. So number one, the relevancy of Vancouver in that market. Now, having come there to call the Women's World Cup years back, I fell in love with Vancouver. I would like to live there if anybody would like to take me in. I will also put a dent in your oyster population, and seafood population. But, you know, just about the relevancy of the club. Look, it's got a great traditional name back to the NASL. I just don't see the fans there. Is it relevant in Vancouver? Where is it and why?
Well, I've got a basement suite for you, Glenn, anytime you want to come up. But
I'm in.
You know, it does have a strong NASL heritage back to 1974, around the same time the Sounders and the Timbers came into the league. And you always kind of compare yourself to those markets. What's happened in Seattle, where they average over 30,000 fans a game? What's happened in Portland, where they sell out every single game and they have that beautiful, unique stadium? Two teams that have won the MLS championship, where the Whitecaps just haven't been able to get it going. We thought when they came into Major League Soccer in 2010, 2011, that they would be the same as Seattle and their expansion cousin Portland in terms of the interest in the city. The early days were good. There were some sellouts at the old Empire Field before they moved into BC Place. I wonder if that hurts them being in a 60,000 seat building. Now, they've done a nice job to curtain it off so that
they have.
Yeah, you know, it looks like I don't want to say a soccer specific facility, but it looks like a 25,000 soccer stadium. And the turf is always something that people will question. Of course, Seattle and Portland have that same issue too, but that doesn't seem to hurt them. So it's a tough one for me to wrap my head around, because I agree with you that Vancouver is a soccer city with that great tradition where they sold out the Whitecaps back in the 70s, won a soccer bowl, and it looked like Vancouver was on the map as one of the key soccer cities in North America. I think the disappointment of the last few years where they haven't made the playoffs, there's been some internal stuff that has come to the attention of some of the supporters who kind of, not if not boycotted, turned their attention elsewhere. And some people will say, like they probably do in every other city, whether it's Los Angeles or Miami or wherever, that there's a lot going on in Vancouver and that distracts the attention. And if you aren't a winning team that's an exciting product, you're not going to draw the numbers. I also think that being away from home for 7 games in a row doesn't help their cause by not having their own soccer-specific own stadium. And so the attention over the summer, I mean, 7 weeks is just, it's outrageous. So in any case, I think the ultimate thing would be to get their own soccer-specific stadium. But as you know, in Houston, that doesn't necessarily become a panacea to fix everything.
No, it doesn't. And I don't think winning does either. I mean, our coverage of the team here, there is no healthy pressure here. Is there healthy pressure from the media in Vancouver?
Not really. And whether it has to come from the media or not, I mean, there's criticism and critique, of course. And I think internally, the Whitecaps want to get things right. They know that the future, the potential of this club and what it could be. So I think the interest is there to do it with the ownership and obviously with the management group right now with what they're doing. I think winning to some degree will help here in Vancouver. But you're up against the Canucks, but not in the summer. And so that should be a time when they really make hay. And I'm just hopeful that over the next few years that can come to be.
Paul Dolan joining us. Paul, 45 seconds on John Herdman being named the coach at TFC. Obviously, it's a lot of national team background, but not daily, day-to-day, like with a club in TFC.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stunner for me that he's done that with Canada hosting World Cup games in 2026, an automatic spot there. But I know that I worked with John Herdman as well, the Gold Cup. I saw you down there in Los Angeles. this is something where he loves a new challenge. And so he's gone from the women's team. What's the next biggest challenge? The men's team in the same association. What's the next big challenge? I know he'd love to play or coach club football in Europe. Well, this is a great stepping stone to do it. The day-to-day operation, it is different from tournament football, where he was excellent at preparing and motivating a group of players who come together for the country. Now he's got a nice budget at Toronto FC, you would think, but he's got a lot of problems on his hand as he steps into it. It'll be a huge challenge for him, but if there's a guy who can do it, I think he can.
He's got and I don't mean this negatively, he's kind of an inspirational guru-esque type guy. I remember that with the women's national team when I interviewed him and then talked to some of the players like Sophie Schmidt and all, that he's kind of got that kind of guru-esque kind of motivational side to him.
Absolutely. Yeah. He gets absolutely everything from his players, and he leaves no stone unturned in preparation either. There's some of the things you've never even thought of that a coach would do of a national team. And now he gets that opportunity to do it day-to-day with a club team. But his, yes, he's very good tactically, but his bread and butter is what he can do to motivate a team. And what's the shelf life of that as well? I think that's a question, but I think if a guy can do it, it's John Herdman. I think he's done a terrific job with Canada, and now he's getting that opportunity with Toronto FC. It should be something else to see.
I think it's exciting for the league. He took Canada to the World Cup. Paul, listen, thank you so much for all the expertise. This is a great precursor for my listeners, and I thank you very much for coming on. And by the way, have a great call.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Glenn. And it's always great to listen to you as well. I do. When the Houston Dynamo are playing in Vancouver, I'm logging into Soccer Matters so that I can get the insight on what's happening with the Dynamo.
We appreciate it, Paul. We're all willing to share information. You know that. He's Paul Dolan, former Canadian national team goalkeeper. You catch him on Apple. We're going to take a break right now. By the way, a reminder for Danish Inspirations, danishinspirations.com. They got the stressless line there. That's Jan Christensen and company over there. If you need modern contemporary furniture, none better. It's danishinspirations.com. Get the stressless, and you will not regret it. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We got more to come.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. Final segment of the night tonight, again, always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they're going to handle your case 24/7. Nights and weekends. Eric Goodman, Austin Chronicle, the Verde Report, does a great job of covering Austin FC, joins us now. And Eric, the word on the street is you were just in Colombia and you took in some games down there. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, that's right. Atletico Nacional in Medellin, one of the most successful, if not the most successful club in Colombia, went out, you know, just to be in that environment. And it kind of, you see where a lot of MLS fan bases have taken a lot of the inspiration. I mean, so many of the chants, you know, were familiar to me from Austin. And then on the field, it's a pretty amazing level when the players are not rolling around and trying to milk the referee, which probably happens more in Colombia than any country on earth. It is a pretty beautiful style of football. Nacional won 5-0. And then also kind of MLS related, you know, when I was traveling in the smallest town that we visited, in a regular, you know, shop clothing store, Inter Miami jerseys, Lionel Messi, are being sold, you know, in small towns in Colombia. The impact that he's had in MLS is, you know, it's breathtaking, because you would never see that, an MLS jersey being sold in Colombia of all places.
That is unbelievable. I think that's a great point about, you know, the rolling around and the simulation, because the definition of a foul in Colombia is very different than the definition of a foul in MLS. And I think that always becomes a challenge for these guys when adapting to Major League Soccer, especially with a pipeline the league has to Colombia.
Yeah. And, you know, it's noticeable. Like, there's just multiple players going down at multiple times, and it's just a part of the game that, you know, I think we do an okay job of in the U.S. for the most part. But yeah, we get these players and, you know, they still try to make that, you know, incorporate that part into the game. And it does. It's not great.
Eric Goodman joining us. Austin Chronicle, Verde Report, fresh off of Colombia, coming on the program tonight. And has always added a lot here. All right. Austin FC, 9-13-6. They got 18 points available outside of the playoff line right now. How much tension, how much urgency, how much nervousness up in ATX right now?
Yeah, it's a discouraging, you know, is probably the word I would use, to discouraged. This team hasn't won a match in close to 2 months. I mean, there's been a lot of off time. And when you get eliminated in the first two matches of the League's Cup, you do spend a lot of idle time. But it just, you know, speaks to the fact that it's been so long since this club was able to tap into any kind of excitement draw any kind of inspiration. And then you look on the pitch and you say, you know, who on this roster is capable of igniting the kind of spark that this team would need to make a push into the playoffs? And you just don't see it. I mean, Sebastian Driussi, he does score, you know, to make it, you know, from a 2-0 loss to a 2-1 loss against Portland on Saturday, his 9th goal of the season, I believe. And you know, he is still someone who can provide a spark on any given night. But apart from him, there's nothing that Josh Wolf has been able to tap into with this team that makes you think that a playoff run is in there with them.
Talking to Eric Goodman. Eric, you know, when you talk about Sebastian Driussi, he was remarkable last year. For me, I know Hany Mukhtar got the MVP, I guess because I was watching him more. I was kind of leaning to Driussi because of the variety of things he did in the various thirds of the field. But have you seen any outward frustration from him? I mean, because this is a pretty significant 180 from what occurred last year to what's occurring this year.
You know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, he is the captain this year. So we do, you know, those of us who cover the team, we do get to see him a bit more. Last year when he was playing at his best, you know, he wasn't talking that much. So we didn't get to necessarily experience, you know, his personality as much when things are going well. You know, now that we do get to, you know, kind of interact with him when it's not going as well, you do see a player that you know, doesn't quite have the galvanizing personality that you would probably want in your captain. I mean, it does make sense why they gave him the captaincy. I think in a lot of teams, you know, Lionel Messi is the captain of Inter Miami, and you know, he's by no means a, you know, a rah-rah personality. You sometimes do just give it to your best player to lead by example, but it just hasn't worked. And the detriment that decision may have had on somebody like Alex Ring, for example, who was the captain for the first 2 years of the club's existence, you know, there just hasn't been a cohesive locker room. A word that last year you heard almost every week with the players was unity. And you just don't hear that as much this year. There's not that kind of, you know, camaraderie and the belief, you know, they might say so, but it doesn't feel like they mean it.
Yeah, unity's a lot easier to corral when you're winning games. That's for sure. So you led me beautifully into Alex Ring. I want to go back to him because he did not look like a happy footballer in the beginning of the year, having to drop the center back with all the problems there, the loss of Gabrielsen back to Europe. Is it notable that there's some headbutting there with the head coach Josh Wolf and Alex Ring? Because Alex Ring's such a key piece of this team and has been.
Well, a player that not one time this entire season has been made available to us to ask any questions to, which I think tells you all you need to know about, you know, how he feels about his place in this team. You know, the last few weeks he's been given the opportunity to play back in that midfield, and he's just not the same player. I mean, when he was at his best as a defensive midfielder, as, you know, year one and early year two of Austin FC and going back to his time at New York City, I mean, he was the kind of player that could stifle, you know, an attack, could be a one-man, you know, defensive stifling of an opposing counterattack. He does not seem to be that committed defensively right now. And then offensively, you know, he is.
Now, wait, let me stop you there. Sure. Is that because you may see creeping in the shelf life of physical limitation? Is that part of it?
I think that is 100% part of it. And also, I'm not sure that he's, you know, his effort is at the level that it should be. You know, you just don't get the sense that he's as dialed in and as passionate about this club as he should be. And you know, you can trace that back to being stripped of the captaincy and not having a defined role in this team. And then last, but also technically, I mean, the first goal last against Portland in the last match, he has an opportunity to make a clearance. And instead of, he honestly could have not touched the ball, let it go out for a throw-in or a goal kick, instead tries to intervene, puts it right back, you know, into the path in front of goal, and it, you know, results in Portland's first goal. And it's not good enough for somebody who is technically one of these team's designated players, which is still, you know, I think, again, an indication of how this roster is not constructed to be a competitive team in MLS right now.
Yeah, and Eric alluding there to the Mora goal in the 39th minute. Evander would hit in the 65th. Triussi would get a consolation goal in the 75th. Austin FC, predictably 66% of the possession, 21 crosses. There you go. Has Josh Wolf lost the team, you think?
He's lost. I mean,
we have to ask this question. It's a legitimate question.
To ask the question. I look forward to asking him, you know, something of that sort. But the players are just, you know, don't seem to be, you know, they seem to have lost themselves and each other. I mean, the mistakes, the inability to finish goals. I mean, you think about what a manager can bring to a team in terms of, you know, what his direct impact would be. You know, putting his players in position to exploit, you know, what the other team's trying to do, create opportunities. You know, at a certain point, it's on the players to take advantage of these opportunities. And then also defensively, we mentioned the ring mistake on the second goal. Leo Väisänen is in a great position marking his man and just misplays, misreads an incoming cross, you know, jumps too early, misses it. And it's an unmarked open header. And that ends up deciding the match. I mean, these are things that would be really hard, really harsh to put right up at the feet of Josh Wolf. But as you mentioned, I mean, he doesn't seem to have been able to tap into any kind of, you know, emotional charge into these players. They're not playing like they're really concerned about the fate of their manager. You certainly don't see that kind of personality on the pitch. So I think, and Josh has never been that kind of, you know, kind of manager. He's not been that kind of coach to try to, you know, galvanize his group. He kind of lets the players be themselves. So it hasn't worked this year. The roster is not built to compete. You know, I truly believe that. And I think you did see last year what Josh Wolf can do as a manager when his team is constructed and his players are informed. But I think at this point, you know, the Wolf out movement has become a legitimate, you know, there's legitimacy to it now in a way that there wasn't, in my opinion, before, you know, around the midpoint of this season.
Yeah, year one, it was utter nonsense. Year two, I mean, the team hummed. But I think you remember me at the beginning of the year when you were on the show, The Horn, before, you know, The Horn disassembled. And we were doing Soccer Matters up in Austin, that I said, this will be a very different year with all the other competition. The other reason I said that, though, is certain guys are getting long in the tooth. The Maxi Arrutis, they're not long-term options for Austin FC. So maybe year two was the year you had to really peak and kind of go for it. I mean, it was a spectacular year. But I looked at the bench from the Portland game, and I just like, this is not deep enough. This bench is clearly not deep enough. And you wouldn't have said that the year before based on some of the players – because of maybe shelf life and things like that. I don't think the striker position has produced enough, obviously. You know, Diego Fagundes getting moved on and his contributions, his being a live wire.
How about this one?
You know, Rigoni didn't really come through.
Exactly.
You lost Gabrielsen, who was really your true leader on the field outside of Alex Ring. So there's a lot of things you can kind of go to, but boy, I looked at that roster in the Portland game. I just said, it's not enough there.
And how about this? In almost identical amounts of minutes played this season, Emiliano Rigoni, 4 goals, 3 assists. Jared Stroud of St. Louis, a player that Austin, you know, didn't even make an opportunity to bring him back into the fold. 4 goals and 4 assists in St. Louis. I mean, one of those players is a designated player making, you know, multiple millions of dollars. And one is Jared Stroud, who's probably close to, you know, league average, if not below, in what he's making. It's just, you know, that, and that's what I think is will be the most telling. I do think Josh Wolf will get and should get an opportunity to manage this team into the fourth season. And I expect that with Rodolfo Borrell, the sporting director who comes from Manchester City and from Liverpool and from Barcelona, I expect, and he's directly said this, there will be massive changeover in this offseason. And I think Josh Wolf deserves an opportunity to take a roster that's been more thought out. I mean, think about this. The sporting director coming into this season was Claudio Reyna, who not only got, you know, let go from the club during the
These are a lot of his players, by the way.
We have to give accountability where accountability lies. Yeah, it's not only in the aftermath of the World Cup when the whole, you know, controversy with the Reynas came out. Not only was he incapable of doing his job in that time, But recently we heard Josh Wolf allude to the fact that during that World Cup run, Claudio Reyna was so focused on Gio and on the World Cup that he was neglecting his responsibilities, is essentially what Josh Wolf told us about.
That's not surprising, having seen how the story unfolded. Sadly,
100%. But it does. I mean, that's a tough thing for a manager and for a club to have to deal with when your top, the architect of the roster is neglecting his responsibilities during the most important time period to do that job.
Yeah, that's sad. It's sad because the level of entrustment to him was big from Anthony Precourt, Andy Lochnane, and everybody. All right, I want to take you back to Rodolfo Borrell. He came in and right away said there were going to be changes. Right away said, some things that might not have been appealing to the everyday fan who wants a rosy green picture. What has he been like talking to the press? How much has he talked? And what else has he said outside of just there's going to be a lot of change?
We've gotten to speak with him twice. And both times he's been, really brutally honest and in I would say respectful of in a way that a lot of people that, and Glenn, really well, in MLS, you don't always get respect in the media as, in terms of understanding of the game, in terms of, let me just say, a generic response. Rodolfo Borrell will tell you exactly what he means. And I think Austin fans already appreciate that. I mean,
that's refreshing.
It's refreshing. You're not going to have a lot of sporting directors tell your fan base straight up, hey, I think the team overachieved last year. I don't think we're as good as, our results have shown. That's, like you said, that's not very appealing to most people, but it is when somebody...
Well, that doesn't follow the mantra and the ideology of, hey, everything is green or purple and it's perfect.
And that's what, something that we get a lot from Josh Wolf, especially, he struggles with the concept of having a lot of possession, creating a lot of chances, but not getting results. I mean, at a certain, there's only so much good you can have in a 2-1 loss. But Borrell, he will tell you, he was very blunt about why they traded Diego Fagundes, who was the face of the team in this city. He felt like the contract was not a good contract for the club. And that was a player that they had an opportunity to move. I think, in a way that there hasn't been those opportunities to move players like Rodney Redes, like Emiliano Rigoni, like potentially Alex Ring, who are players on big contracts that is kind of holding this team back. So you're going to see, I think, at least two of the three of those players out the door, along with Fagundes, at the end of this season. And then, we'll see what vision Borrell, he has all of these connections in Europe. Can he bring, somebody who has experience in the Premier League, somebody who has experience in La Liga? Will he bring a player that those of us who are fans of the sport know well? I've been telling, Austin fans, this is just my own speculation, but it's probably not for this season, but maybe, Mohamed Salah is a name to watch down the road as a player that's aging into that range that might be interested. I'm obviously, the Saudis and that side of the world, he is very appealing. He appeals to them as well. But players like that, could be the impact that Rodolfo Borrell could have. But he's got a lot of
work. That's also the impact Messi may have.
Exactly. It's the impact of Messi. It's the impact of where this league is going. And you don't want to over promise and under deliver. But Rodolfo Borrell, has connections that this league has rarely seen. But he's got a lot of work on his hands because this roster is not in condition to compete for any kind of the trophies that Austin wants to win.
I looked at that roster last night and all the problems and challenges this year, and the construction of it has to be questioned in recent times. All right, Anthony Precourt, Andy Lochnane, what have you heard for them? I mean, how much do they speak to the fan base, and what's the communication with them?
Very rarely. I mean, you'll get a tweet from Anthony Precourt once in a while. Andy Lochnane is somebody who I respect a lot, and
I like Andy a lot. I used to talk to him a lot, and he'd come on the show a lot, but it's not anymore.
I like I personally don't know the extent of his involvement in on-field matters, and I don't think there is very much of that. I think Andy.
Well, he did a great job though of helping get this thing off and running, Mike.
100%. I think when you think about the stadium, the game, the atmosphere, where the direction of the club as an organization, I think
remarkable job.
Yeah, really, really impressive. I think they nailed it on a lot of areas. And really, when you bring something new into a community like Austin, that's very proud and very defined, not every new thing is going to jive with that. But I think the club did a really good job of gearing themselves to, you're going to play into some of the, themes that you have here in Austin, but not overdo it and make it a forced concept. So I think Anthony Precourt is fortunate to have somebody like Andy Lochnane there to guide the direction of the club as a business. And now I do think, in a way that Claudio Reyna could never be, somebody who you can entrust in terms of Rodolfo Borrell to lead this club on the pitch. And another interesting thing about Borrell is at every opportunity he has backed Josh Wolf, and at every opportunity has said Josh Wolf is one of the reasons why I took this job, because I have faith in this manager and I want to be able to provide him a team that can that Josh can take and use and fit his system and potentially take a team, to contending for these trophies.
Eric, great stuff. I will say there should be optimism and excitement around potential change here. I really think so. It means somebody's leaping into action and doing something about it. And one of those things is the hiring of Rodolfo Borrell. So listen, thanks very much. Welcome back from Columbia. I'll see you Thursday. Longhorn Network. It's the Longhorns Texas Tech at Mike A. Myers. I'll see you there, Eric.
Yeah, can't wait.
I got the call of that game with Michael LaHood. We're going to have a lot of fun up in Austin on Thursday.
Is that going to be your first time with LaHood?
No. I've done a number of college games.
Right. Well, can't wait for that.
With Michael. Yeah, I'm sure you're going to lose sleep over. All right, Eric, thank you so much for coming on again, as always.
Take care, Glenn.
All right, Eric Goodman, excellent stuff. Austin Chronicle, Verde Report. That does it tonight for us on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. I remind you about John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. Subscribe to the podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever you get it. Don't forget about LamontBrands.com for your Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats. The proceeds go to the 501c charity, Snowdrop Foundation for Pediatric Cancer. And that does it for us tonight. Until next Tuesday night, remember, soccer.